that because, you know, your relationship's over or you want to move on from where you've been and stuff like that. And you don't want to see updates from sometimes people. Might be painful for you. It's interesting how that can sometimes turn into a sense of this person's disappeared. You know, it's a sense that, right, actually, the fact they're digitally gone means that they're really gone, which is kind of fascinating where we're at right now.
I've only done it with two people. Second was yesterday, and it was because I just felt this person has given me 2 years of just sniping and nothing useful.
Yep.
There's other people who give me a lot of sniping, but they occasionally give me useful stuff, so they're fine.
Right. I'm the same way. I'm super tolerant. I don't think I've ever blocked anybody at any time. I probably should. But I'm one of these that you know, I know I'm in a filter bubble already. So I'm thinking, right, if I get now and again somebody giving me a bit of crap, that's probably healthy for me. But then I've got to also think maybe it is, you know, maybe I don't want to be abused. I don't want to be disparaged in this way, but sometimes happens, you know.
It makes you anti-fragile if you actively bring people in who disagree with you. This is why we brought Bill Berman in as a board advisor at Candidate ID, because he told us we needed to become a CRM. And we went, absolutely not. This is like 2 years ago. And we went,
yep.
Don't agree at all. And then we thought, we need to know more about what he means. So that's why we brought him on.
No, so I think that's important because we're all kind of in this, we've got the ability to homogenize our social networks. We can literally get people of like mind. We all do. I mean, there's no question that everyone who is in my social networks probably drinks fucking lattes. You know, they're the kind of people that would not have a problem with going and ordering, you know, a vegan meal or something. But there's a massive network of people that disparage that. You know, I've got one or two friends that are in my milieu that, you know, routinely criticize me for being a metropolitan elitist. And I think, all right, I'll take that because, you know,
Aaron Banks would not wish you well.
No. And you know, I'm happy with that. I mean, good company. I'm an enemy of his. Anyway, enough chit chat. We are live, so we better get on with it. Welcome everyone to Brain Food Live on Air. It is now episode 26. So we're trucking on. Welcome everybody. For people who haven't seen the show before, we do this every week. We primarily review last week's Brain Food, the content that we sent in the newsletter last Sunday. We also touch on the topics we've been discussing in the Facebook group all week. And we dive into a focus topic where Adam and I admit our ignorance and therefore need to invite in guests that know a little bit more about the topic than we do. I'm your host, Hung Lee, and I'm joined as ever by my co-host and kind of comeback champion, of comeback promoter, Adam Gordon. Adam, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. And basically you gave me a bit of stick last week because I'd been delegating all my chief promoting work.
Exactly.
And so what was it? One LinkedIn post, 130 likes and 16,000-17,000 views.
Yeah.
That was all right.
That was all right. That's back to form. So, you know, you can retain the title of chief promoter with a bit of credibility. So it's a return to form.
Andy Murray coming back from injury and making the quarterfinals or something.
That's it. Or even, you know, Pete Sampras coming out of retirement and winning the US Open on the first rack. You know, this is the way you got to do it. Anyway, Adam, how are you? You've been on holiday again, I think, this week. Is that true?
Yeah. I've been on holiday. I've been on the least glamorous holiday I've been on in years. Not that I go on glamorous holidays, but I was in Stonehaven. And no offense to Stonehaven, but there's not a lot there. It's pretty cold. But my wife went there a lot in a caravan when she was a kid. And it's like a happy place for her. So she inflicted it on all of us for the last week.
You know what? Have the kids forgiven her? Because you know, if they're not having a good time, they'll remember.
They got to play football, they got to hang out. Yeah, it's all cool. Can you hear me okay, Hung? Because it sounds like everybody else thinks I'm quiet.
I can hear you fine. But I dare say if lots of people are complaining, you should
All right, Giles and Matt, is that better?
That's Let's way too out. High.
Is it just the same for you? Yeah, everyone says that's better. Cool.
Yeah, okay. I'll tell you why I heard you fine, because my volume on you was up. So I think now is better. Okay, yeah. Cool. All right. So listen, Adam, we kind of always talk through about what was interesting in Brain Food last week. So I trust you had the time to read it whilst you're in the rocky beaches of Stonehaven. What was interesting for you in recruiting Brain Food last week, man?
Well, I thought the article about LinkedIn, why aren't we always complaining about LinkedIn the way that people complain about Facebook and stuff? Mm. So, you know, I think the fact that people spend an average of 17 minutes a month actually on the site is probably one reason. Like, mm-hmm. it's not in the same league. It's not in the same league as an Instagram mm-hmm. or even mm-hmm. a Snapchat in terms of engagement. Yeah, yeah. So there's not enough going on there, really. It's quite niche. If you think about the world and the world of social media, LinkedIn's a really, really niche site. It's for white-collar professionals, basically. It's
you know
about
what
career
we,
things.
Indeed. And, you know, we talked about filter bubbles before we came on air. And actually, LinkedIn is the filter bubble we don't think of as a filter bubble, because it is the universe for recruiters in many respects. We don't think beyond it. We often, you know, are locked into what's in there. But you know what? If you're a civilian, you're a normal person not involved in the activity of recruitment or sales, you probably don't log in to LinkedIn at all. You know, you set up your account, you stick it up there. If you're not on the job search, you're literally not logging in. So, it's definitely a factor. And the story I've just linked to, by the way, refers to this. And the premise was, you know what? Why has LinkedIn avoided a lot of the negativity that Facebook, Twitter, and the more popular apps have received? And, you know, perhaps it's because it is so niche. The other angle on this, though, was because that LinkedIn has much stronger identity verification, not because it does anything technically different, but because your identity needs to be linked for it to be useful. So in other words, it almost makes no sense to create a fake account on LinkedIn unless you're a spammer, because you actually do need to get a job at some point. So there's literally no point in creating a fake account unless you are literally, you know, trying to get email addresses and what have you. So your identity is key to the value of LinkedIn, unlike, let's say, Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or what have you. Mark, I know there's lots of fake accounts. Yeah. We get that.
Not like Facebook, though.
Yeah, I mean, the point is, for normal people, there's no point in doing the fake accounts. The value is that it's connected to your ability to earn cash. Unless you're, you know, borderline gray area criminal type, there's no point in doing that otherwise. Anyway, what else was interesting for you, Adam?
The article about how to create better emails.
Wow, that was awesome. Yeah.
So, I mean, I didn't agree with all of the suggestions in there. However, mm-hmm. I did agree with quite a few of them. And the art of email writing is really important for recruiters. Mm. And we get it really badly wrong. There's nothing worse than spelling mistakes and grammatical errors and really poor subject headings and long emails, like verbose emails. So I would absolutely encourage, on the whole, I would encourage everybody to go and read that article. The precise meaning of words is really vital, and most people don't do it properly.
You know what? If you work with software developers, which I've had the fortune of doing, building Workshape and so on, when I first encountered what they were doing, I was actually astonished as to how long they spent on getting the words right. So technical precision, like we spent hours debating whether we should call the labeling various things, because the developers understood, and I didn't understand it at the time, but the developers understood that they needed to be technically precise and agree on the language. Otherwise, that'll have a cascade effect of misunderstanding by using terminology in a more casual and slapdash way. So one of the things that I think the article I've just posted on the chat stream there is trying to emphasize, and it was written by software developers, by the way, how to write better email as a software developer, was this idea of technical precision. Also loved the idea that they had of highlighting in bold the actions that you needed to take or you wanted to take. Rather than, if you want to send a wall of text, great, but highlight the points that help the reader surface that stuff out. Don't just send a wall of text and expect them to plow through it. So some basic stuff. Developers, I think, have polished this. Recruiters, I think, are miles behind. So, everyone, please read that post. It's a fantastic one. Anything else that was interesting for you?
The interactive mind map listing all the OSINT resources.
Oh yeah, cool.
I'm getting more and more interested in OSINT. You know, it's where sourcing just got more strategic all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So it's not just finding out about people, individuals, just brilliant information and open source as well, so everybody can contribute, and it's all free.
Yep, cool. So I want to just address what Chad's just posted there in a sec, but I've also just posted the OSINT framework. Everyone should just check that out. It basically is it's kind of an interesting way of presenting a list. Instead of just sticking a list of things down, what they've done is created a mind map which tries to relate some of these resources together, but it's got 100 odd things in there that are going to be useful for recruiters. So dive right into that. Okay, cool. What else was interesting, Adam?
The article from Human Predictions, which listed the amount of time that people spend in different large tech companies.
Ah, yes.
The tenure based on the kind of roles that they do. I thought that was quite interesting. I suspect that in smaller startup businesses, it's going to look a bit different, but I don't know whether it's going to be people stay longer or shorter. Longer because of like vesting periods for share options and things, or don't know, interesting.
There's a level of seniority. Apparently in Facebook, people kind of cycle around in kind of a normal way. But after a certain period where basically they've achieved a certain level, people don't move out because the vested interest of hanging around is simply too great. Yeah. So they've got an interesting way to retain, I think, management tier and above in Facebook. But yeah, great post by Human Predictions. I think they were using LinkedIn data as well. Essentially to help us understand what is the lifetime value of an employee. You know, I mean, if you hire a UX designer in San Francisco, how long do you reckon you should keep them? 18 months, it seems. So something like that. Okay, cool. What else was interesting, Adam?
Well, actually, you posted one about how to do good Facebook ads. I wasn't that interested in the Facebook ads bit. I was interested in the fact that it escaped me that lookalike audience building's been deemed illegal under GDPR, which is, after I told you, I think I said last week before we went live, that CMO of one global recruitment business I know hasn't been doing anything kind of, or their programmatic advertising's been all about, they're basically coming away from job boards, and they've got a regressive spend on job boards between now and 2022 where it's zero, and it's all about lookalike targeting, and so I didn't realize that it was deemed illegal under GDPR.
GDPR is so wide. I mean, one thing that you need to know about the EU, and I'm learning about the EU as we go, as we all are discovering, but it gives directives, and GDPR is a directive, which essentially says at a European-wide level, we kind of reckon you should do this, but then it's up to the local jurisdictions to interpret and implement and enforce that. So I think the idea that GDPR will stop lookalike, I think, is definitely going to be more present in certain jurisdictions than others, particularly Germany, essentially. I think was the main one that was saying, you know what, that might be contravening some of our laws under our understanding of GDPR, that lookalike audiences may be contravening privacy rules there. So, hey, if you're going to use Facebook ads, you know, get in there, because I think this is going to be a creeping kind of legislative friction on this, in the sense that lots of businesses might actually end up doing illegal stuff if there's a momentum behind blocking this kind of thing. But anyway, worth looking at. Also related to what Chad was mentioning there, EU job boards versus Google for jobs. Again, you know, you can start seeing that the EU as a legislative superpower, so to speak, is using its power. Typically against US-based businesses, against anti-competition and so on. So I think this topic refers to a bunch of European job boards essentially saying, look, Google aren't necessarily being Google, but they're actually pointing their results to Google properties, which I think is true. Whether
of course
that's,
it is.
Whether that is so that's definitely true. But whether that is a bad thing or an unjust thing, I don't know. I'm kind of not sure about that because, you know, Google have created the search engine. It's kind of up to them to do what they need to do, you know.
I've been saying it. I mean, I'm guessing that's maybe something you'll cover in this week's Brain Food coming up, the EU job boards thing. Yeah. So I've been saying this for years. Anybody that's got a parasitic business model needs to just cut it out because Google's going to switch them off. Companies like Skyscanner and anybody that aggregates other people's data, forget about it. There's one death star in this, and it's Google. Nobody is going to win except Google. That's why Indeed has entirely changed everything it's doing.
Yeah, and you're right. A lot of these kind of little aggregators, the massive businesses, Skyscanner, Booking.com, anything that basically is kind of creating a walled garden or a vertical within Google, if you like. I think Google is definitely going to try and reclaim that. Skyscanner, classic example. Google for flights is starting to happen. They're starting to guarantee the lowest cost flights. So you can see that they've got their crosshairs in some of these smaller aggregators. And they're going to try and reclaim their reputation as the one-stop shop for discovery. That's, I think, the mission for Google, which is a welcome return to their original core. But at the same time, you know, sad news for a lot of, I think, pretty cool businesses that have done a great service to the user pop. I think, I forget this guy. I know Trade IT. I don't know why he's called himself Trade IT. I think it's either Colin or Steve. It's Colin, isn't it? Colin, call yourself Colin, man. But thank you for your correction. GDPR is a regulation, a directive. I'm prepared to take your to take that point. I need to know more about this than I do. So thank you for coming in. Okay, anything else interesting before we start speaking to some of these podcast heroes here?
Well, I think the one thing. The other thing I liked was Matt Alder's How to Create a Great Podcast.
Yes.
And Monica's telling us to get on with it. So I think we should probably just get on and talk about recruiting podcasts.
Monica, listen, it's all about podcasts, but you do realize that chit chat is part of the story here. But we'll get there shortly. And this is the good lead up because everyone who cares about podcasting should really read this post. And Matt often doesn't really write anymore because obviously he's very consumed with producing recruiting futures. But it was wonderful, I think, to see this podcast, this write up, because you're celebrating his 200th edition. To give you an idea, we're on 26, man. Matt's been doing it 200 episodes, incredible, and he's also
older than us. He is much, much older than us.
He's younger than you and me, mate. I do think that's true. But he's done a marvelous job. And that post is worth reading. And let's bring Matt on right now because he's been watching here. I can see him there. So let's just bring him on and we'll learn the good stuff.
I think he started his podcast in 1989.
I want to know when he did because I think it's hard to keep the longevity, man.
I think it's 4 years, isn't it? Something like that.
I'm not sure he's doing that regular. Yeah, I think he's done at least a cadence around 40, 50 episodes a year, which is big. There he is. Matt, how are you doing?
1989? I was about 5 in 1989. What are you talking about?
You invented... I think you invented digital recruitment in about 1986 at TMP.
Yeah, and the internet as well.
Yeah, the internet, it's all got Matt's paws all over it. Matt, listen, I'm really pleased to get you on the show. For people who don't know who you are, do you want to just like quickly introduce, like the guy under the rock who doesn't know who you are? Can you just introduce yourself very quickly and what do you do?
So I'm Matt. I do a couple of things. I am an independent talent acquisition consultant. So I work with a number of employers on talent acquisition problems and technology and strategy. But over the last 4 years, as Lars has just said in the comments, I started my podcast in 2015. My podcast is becoming increasingly a bigger part of my job. So I would think it probably takes anything sort of 40% and 50% of my time now. So it's become a big thing. Published my 200th episode a few weeks back, and I published episode 203 this morning. And the reason, one of the reasons I don't write very much is I'm currently writing another book. I do write when I'm not podcasting.
That's amazing. I need to tell you one thing as well, Matt, because you're actually, and I do say this to people who talk about sort of recruiting brain food and stuff. Your input to me right when I started putting the newsletter together was really significant. And do you remember what you said to me about commitment? I'm not sure you do.
Remind me.
Basically, you explained to me what you did at Recruiting Futures podcast and how you got the kind of you committed to do a year's worth of it.
So
you see a lot of podcasts pop up and pop out, and it's about the commitment. It's about saying, hey, listen, I'm going to do 52 of these. I'm going to do this number and then review it. And that taught me a huge lesson on recruiting brain food as the newsletter. Because I remembered that at the quit point that I had at issue number 2. That was a quit point. It was like, people don't know, but I sent the first newsletter to nobody but myself. Like I was the only subscriber of the first newsletter. It was me. Because I didn't know what I was doing. So no one read it. And I was like, what am I doing? And I nearly never sent the second one. And then there was a quit point at issue number 10. And there was a quit point at issue number 30. And I remember what you said. And you said, you know what? You got to commit to do the year. And because I was doing a weekly cadence, I thought, look, I'm just going to ignore how many people read it. I'm just going to keep doing it till I hit 52 and then see where I'm at. So I think that's one of the key lessons I've learned from you about how to create audience is that level of commitment. Now, the question back to you is, why do you think that's important? Why does that sort of work?
I think it works. First of all, you have to think about the competition for attention that goes on these days. So, getting people's attention is very, very difficult. Lots of people start all kinds of initiatives when it comes to publishing content, whether that's video blogs or newsletters or written blogs or podcasts or whatever it is. But most people don't keep it up. So I think, committing to doing something over a long period of time sets you up for a better chance of success because, overnight success is very, 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 very difficult. Occasionally you'll have things that go viral and create an instant audience. But then again, is that audience sustainable over the long term? So in my experience, and this was the same when I used to write a blog, even longer ago, sort of 2005, 2006, I think it just takes time to build an audience. And particularly with podcasts, there's no real shortcut for podcasts. The most, I think the others will agree with me when they come on. If they don't, they don't. But to me, I think the best way that podcasts grow is by word of mouth. Podcast discovery is still an issue. Google's only just kind of rejigging the way it indexes them. A lot of the podcasting apps don't have particularly good discovery mechanisms within them. Social media might drive traffic to a particular episode, but people probably don't listen to it there and then because it's quite interruptive and podcasting, people decide when they're going to listen to your podcast. You don't decide when they're going to listen to it. And that's key. So it means that word of mouth is the most critical way of growing an audience in this particular medium. And to get word of mouth, you have to produce content that is valuable to your audience, but it also takes a long period of time. I'm not quite sure how many people listened to my first episode in the first few weeks it went live, but it wasn't many, and it obviously wasn't anything like the kind of numbers that I'm getting now. The good thing about podcasting is it's all archived, so if you want to go back and listen to my first episode, please don't, because it is terrible.
Everyone now needs to do that.
Yeah. It's still out there.
If anybody can find Matt's first podcast, just please find it and link it to the chat stream there so we can all listen in. All right, Matt, listen, you talk about audience numbers. Do you mind sharing us right now? Like, do you know how many people listen to Recruiting Futures podcast now?
Yeah, audience numbers are difficult because they're measured in all kinds of different ways. The IAB have just released a kind of a global standard for podcast measurement, and there's still sort of lots of debate about that. So you can measure listeners, you can measure listens, you can measure all kinds of things. I suppose to give some kind of context, I'm probably getting anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 people per episode. But it kind of varies. Some are more, some are less. It takes a while to grow, to grow a kind of audience. But
Of course, your Google results are different based on kind of what Google thinks you want. But I've Googled recruitment podcast, and the first 9 are lists of recruitment podcasts.
Yeah.
And then the 10th is RF podcast.
Nice. Google's, I'm not 1,000,000% up on podcast and Google's relationships. I could get very, very geeky and nerdy about podcast distribution and talk about that for hours, but that's a bit boring. I know that Google are now indexing individual episodes and making them playable within the search results, I think, which is a brand new thing. But there's a massive kind of way to go in terms of how that works. Apple still control 70 or 80% of distribution.
Is it for Apple users?
Sorry,
are podcasts for Apple users? That's what I was going to ask.
No, because when I say Apple control the distribution, I don't necessarily mean that people are always listening on Apple devices. A large part of podcast consumption is on Apple devices. One of the things that, as I say, podcast stats can be very, very wonky depending on your sort of provider and how you measure them. But they're also very, very good at measuring the sort of technology that people are listening on and where those people are located and, all that kind of stuff. So it's changed a lot over the last couple of years. Spotify's come in and sort of taken 10% of the audience, I think. Pandora's doing podcasts now and the markets of that works. It's kind of changing. And the podcast audience globally is still growing. 50% of the global podcast audience is in North America, but only 50% of people in North America have listened to a podcast. So, there's massive potential for kind of future growth.
Why do you think there's been this massive revival of podcasting, Matt? I mean, it seems that podcasts have been around. I mean, I remember a period where the idea of podcasts first came about, but it seems that the last, 2-3 years, it's really exploded. So can you sort of explain why do you think that is?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was getting distracted by the comments. Podcasts have always been growing. I think the kind of growth curve has accelerated in the last few years, but they never actually went away. They stopped being covered by the media for a few years, but they never actually went away. I think what you're getting now is you're getting a critical mass of audience that makes it interesting for advertisers, the mainstream media are writing about podcasting a lot more. You're getting kind of runaway podcasting hits. So, Serial is the one that everyone always mentions in terms of bringing lots of people into the podcasting, I said Serial and Siri went off on my phone, so let me just turn that off. Bringing lots of people to the kind of the podcasting and the podcasting audience. But it's just, I think a lot of it is to do with where and when people listen to podcasts. So I think all the kind of the other media that we're surrounded with, whether it's kind of live video shows like this or things that pop up on our social media streams and all this kind of stuff, it's this kind of really sort of busy media time. And I think with podcasting, obviously things like the iPhone Availability of podcasts on smartphones has massively accelerated it. You can, I find that most people listen to my show when they're commuting, when they're in the gym, when they're walking the dog. Some guys once sent me an email and said that he listened to my podcast when he was doing his daily sit-ups, and it was very helpful for him, which is good. So I think that podcasting kind of gets people at a different time and a different mode to some of the other kind of mass media consumption that's out there. And as we get busier, I think we seek, these kind of sort of breaks away from screens. With podcasting being audio, I think that helps fuel it. That helps fuel it as well. And also things like, the major audio providers, radio providers, making their content podcast friendly is another issue. So in the UK, we have the BBC Sounds app, where the BBC have basically taken all their content and split it down into individual podcasts, which is something that took them a long time to get around to doing.
Yeah.
What's been your favorite podcast that you've done, Matt?
I couldn't pick one. It was my first one. No. That's a good question, because normally people ask me who my favorite guest is, and obviously I couldn't possibly say, particularly as both of you two have been on at various points. My favorite podcast to do was the 200th episode, because we did that live at Wreckfest, and actually recording something in front of a live audience to only broadcast the audio of it afterwards was brilliant. And also, lots of people in the comments have been a guest on my podcast as well, so they're all vying with each other to say who was best. But that was my favorite podcasting experience, recording the episode live on stage with a live panel, and with Chad and Cheese in the audience.
Before we kind of let you go, Max, I know you've got all kinds of fringe stuff to get in the fridge right now, so you've got loads of things going
on. I'm getting to five shows tomorrow.
It's total chaos. So I don't want to eat up too much of your time. But just one final question for the folks that are listening in and thinking, oh, I want to start a podcast. I really want to do this, and they want to build an audience. What would your advice be to that rookie that's kind of not doing it right now? What's the one thing that this person needs to know?
There's two things they need to know. First of all, they need to know who their audience is and what their audience wants and where that audience are. I think lots of people start podcasts and don't really think about who's actually going to listen to it. And when you do that, then numbers are kind of immaterial, because if you're broadcasting, to a really kind of niche audience, it doesn't really matter how many downloads you get. It's just kind of how much of that audience is listening. So understanding your audience and what they want and what they're going to find interesting is absolutely critical. And the second thing is time. When I was sort of blogging a few years ago, I was kind of one of the first recruitment blogs in the UK, and I used to tell people all the time that they should blog and it was a great thing to do and all this sort of stuff. Podcasting is a little bit different, because it does take a huge amount of time, and I'm sure that everyone else who's going to come on is definitely going to agree with me about this. So if you're going to do it properly, it is going to take time. So you need to make sure that you can commit the time to make it good. So audience and having the time to do it. And that means it isn't for everyone. Just because of that time factor.
Fantastic, Matt. That's a brilliant takeaway. I'm going to ask all the guests the same question at the end when we kind of come to the end of every segment. So hopefully we get a list of things that we can communicate to the audience that's listening in once more. Listen, Matt, let me let you go. Please do enjoy your fringe. I will try and hopefully we'll catch up at some point. I know we oscillate around in the same circle. So hopefully we'll be able to catch up over a drink or something in the near future, mate.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Take care, man.
Cheers, Matt. See you.
Great. Matt Alder, man. I mean, he was, it probably is one of the most widely listened podcasts, I think, in the industry. And longevity is definitely part of the story there, isn't it?
I really loved. He did one just about 2 months ago with Alan Bailey from Intel. Absolutely loved it, and that's what prompted us, of course, to bring Kobe on, her colleague.
Yeah, you know what? One of the things that is really useful about podcasts is the introduction and discovery of new people that you'd otherwise not have the inclination to look upon. You know, everyone is like a LinkedIn or an AngelList profile or whatever. You don't know who they are, but once you've heard their voice, you've seen them on video or something like this, then suddenly it becomes a little bit more real. Okay, cool. I want to go straight on to the next guest. The reason why is because whereas Matt has gone and done like a 4-year sprint at doing podcasting, I want to bring on a lady that really has kind of, I think, somehow accelerated her podcast from really nothing much to something that is now really motoring away. This is Laurie Ruderman, of course, the super famous Laurie Ruderman. I think she is there. But her Let's Fix Work podcast is fantastic. And not only fantastic, but she hasn't been doing that for very long. And I will really want to know, you know, what her secret is to get to that point. So Laurie, I hope you're there. I'm going to invite you on screen now. And hopefully she'll be able to pop up there. Yeah, there we go, John. Let's Fix Work. Like having a theme, I think, is also a thing that is important. Also linked a little bit with Matt's point about having an audience or being aware of audience. There she is. Hey. Laurie Ruderman. How are you?
Good. It's humbling to follow Matt. You didn't tell me I would follow such a legend in the industry.
You know what? I would have got him. I would have got you ahead of him, but I couldn't find you on the invite list. And you know, it was literally that distribution. But
well, firstly, Laurie, he's my hero. Yeah.
No, I need to firstly say the equipment. You have got equipment. Tell me about the hardware, because I'm like with these Apple phones here. You've got the Bluetooth thing and the huge mic. Is how important is the sound quality with all of this?
Well, it depends. I've noticed a correlation between audience size and sound quality. So you asked how to accelerate a podcast, and the answer is money. It's an investment.
Right.
So that's it. That's the answer to everything in this world, by the way. If you want to fix something, you just throw money at it and it fixes itself. But podcasting, true and true, just requires some basic investment. So I have a Shure SMB 58 microphone, and then I just use my Bose noise canceling headset and plug it right into my Mac, and I use GarageBand to record. I mean, it couldn't be any easier, but the magic comes in hiring a producer. That's it.
Right. Hang on. So you're throwing lots of things at me here. So firstly, you have a mic.
I do.
Which is a branded mic. And this is the thing.
Like
and
a
it looks
wedding
amazing.
Singer mic. Yeah. You see it?
But I can already hear the difference. I mean, no disrespect to Matt, but he was speaking against instruction. I did tell him to put a mic close to his mouth. But
he's going to wear the nerdy AirPods, right? Yeah.
Not doing the job, right? I mean, basically, the sound quality is totally different. So now I can hear your voice, and suddenly we get more people listening in because actually we like to hear the nice voice.
Tell
me about this. This thing costs like $1,000.
No, it
costs
like $50, you know, and Amazon. So I'm sure Amazon across the world could ship you a $50 microphone that rock stars and wedding singers have been using for years. And then I bought a USB plug to connect it to my Mac. And there you go. Maybe
and
it cost
it
me
worked.
$60 US. Yeah, it was great.
Okay,
great.
So can you tell me the brand again? So somebody in the audience is going to get this Amazon link out there and share it. And we're going to help sell some more of these things.
It's called Shure, S-H-U-R-E, S-M-B, like small to medium-sized businesses. 58, I think, is the model. Yeah.
58. Go. Someone please find that because I don't have the time on Amazon. Just link it on the chat stream there. I'm going to go buy it after this show.
Yeah. There are better mics to get, and you have to get a mic stand. So I'll show you in my office. My husband built me this mic stand.
Okay. It's just freestanding, basically, this thing, right? So I've got to rig something up or whatever. That's okay. I mean, look at this. Adam Posner, correct. I mean, I'm using these things here.
But Adam sounds good. What's Adam using?
Blue Yeti, there we go. I mean, these are experts. I feel like such an amateur with this thing. It's ridiculous.
No.
Adam, you as well, man. You even have to do a switch mid
I actually had to take my earphones out because somebody said they couldn't hear me.
Exactly. And now there's like big echo in your voice as well. So this is all bad for audio, right? Okay, so we need to spend some money. The Bose headset, everyone knows Bose. That's like $300, right?
That costs a bit of money. But the difference is don't Bluetooth it in. Plug it right into your device, because the more devices you have running while recording, the more it distorts your audio. So
Keep it
simple. Keep it all plugged in. Go analog if you can. So yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so you've got all of this kit.
I do.
But then once you've recorded the thing, you're saying, you know what, you need a pro producer. Don't try and like mess around with whatever you're doing. Get someone to do it.
Yeah, I have a producer who was based in Nashville and has moved to Orlando, which, by the way, is the wrong way to do it, in my opinion. But he's now in Orlando. And he's so fantastic. He removes the the ums. If there's a boring guest who's not speaking at a decent enough cadence, he'll speed up the cadence or he'll slow it down. But he's listening so other people can also listen and understand. So he's in what I consider to be an audience advocate. And I think you need that, because even if you are a pretty good producer, you have your own point of view when you're listening. So he's an independent associate who is just looking for a great quality of the audio and a great representation of the conversation. So he will also, with my blessing, cut out a tremendous amount of boring shit, which is also really important, right? Not everything everybody says is genius. So you got to cut some of it out.
No, I mean, looking at Monica's feedback, they would have cut Adam and I's chat right away. Like 20 minutes gone immediately. And Monica, you're probably right. I've got to be honest.
Some chit chat's okay.
So what you're saying to me here is really educating me about how amateurish I am with this, because I've totally neglected post-production. I just thought, right, here it is, listen to it. But of course, it might be unlistenable, right? It could be very difficult.
You know, it also depends on the maturity of your audience. If you have an audience that's very well schooled in podcasting and are used to listening to the BBC and Serial here in America, or a very well produced true crime podcast, they're going to have a level of expectations that are pretty high. But I think your average recruitment, sourcing, HR professional may or may not. And there's something also beautiful in not being too perfect, not being too special, not like trying to make it just so polished and having it a little rough, like ship it, take a risk.
Yeah.
I'm somewhere in the middle. Like I did that whole thing where I just wanted to push something out and nobody listened to it. And so now I'm erring on the side of an investment, but I'm not Rich Roll. You know, I'm not any of these famous podcasters. I make $1,000 a month investment in my podcast. That's how much it costs me to publish Let's Fix Work. Yeah.
Wow. This is the equipment plus the post prod. I guess the post prod is the main thing.
It's just the production is $1,000 a month. So but I do 4 to 5 shows a month. So it's about 200, 250 an episode.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's sponsored and sometimes it's not. I find my life is easier without a sponsor, but I have inbound inquiries now coming in, right? I've created a community that this thing is just yet another extension of my outbound marketing. So
yeah. And you've always had a following, Laurie. I mean, you're one of the things that you've been
not always. I mean, back in the day I didn't, but
back in your HR days, maybe not. But since you did the punk rock thing, I think you were one of the very early pioneers of understanding that there was a way you can connect to a large amount of people. If you have a unique voice. And actually, I think that's one of the core qualities of your work, both in writing and in the podcast, is that you do have a unique way of communicating. I just want to touch on that. Like, there's going to be folks out there that would think, how do I do that? Do you think it's like an innate way that you communicate? Or is there any kind of way in which you've kind of learned, actually, if I do it this way, it's going to be a bit more distinctive or
Well, data doesn't lie. And over the years, when I've tried to be super nerdy and esoteric about the world of recruitment and HR, nobody cares. But if I show a little bit of myself, by far, whether it's podcasting or blogging or vlogging or whatever the format, when I just reveal a little bit of who I am, a little bit of my humility, a little bit of my flaws, right? People respond to that and connect with that. And then they trust that I have a pile of books on the side of my desk that I've been reading. And I do have the bona fides to be in the world of human resources. You know, I posted a photo yesterday of like 9 or 10 books that are just sitting next to my desk. And they're wonderful books written by our colleagues like Katrina Collier and Chris Dunn and all sorts of people about the world of human resources. I could never do that. I could never write a book about human resources because I'm interested in it for 5 minutes and then I'm bored. And I think most people are like me, you know, they're nerdy for a little bit and then they're like, what else? You know, there's got to be something else. So I try to appeal to that, right? I try to appeal to the practitioner who loves what they do for a living, but knows there's a little bit more.
No, and that's always, and Adam, I'm literally, because I've been so enjoying, by the way, I could speak to Lloyd forever. This is part of the
problem. I'm a fan of Adam. I've not met him yet. So it's nice to connect. Yeah.
Really, he's kind of overrated, but I'll stop speaking. Adam, you ask your question. Go ahead.
Well, your podcast, yeah, nice to meet you, Laurie, because this is the first time we met. Your podcast is the only one I know that has a purpose as the title of the podcast. Tell us a bit about what it means. Let's fix work. What are you trying to do?
So my whole life, people have been complaining to me about their jobs, whether it was my parents, they both hated what they did for a living, or my cousins or my siblings, or even when I went into human resources, my clients, my colleagues, my peers, everybody complained about work. And I felt like a tuning fork for these stories, right? When I got in the room, people tried to reset their lives by telling me their narrative. And I really saw individuals, including me in my life, make the same mistakes around work over and over again. And it brought me to this point where I realized, I think we fix work by fixing ourselves. So whatever stuff we have outside of work, we're bringing it into the work environment and reenacting it over and over again. Oh, this person doesn't like me. Oh, I don't get heard enough at meetings. Whatever it is. And it really has nothing to do about work, but how we relate. Our relationships in the world are playing out just to another degree in the workplace. So the guests I have on the show really try to reflect that yeah, you can have human resources, processes, technologies, all that kind of good stuff to help the protocols at work. But if you're not working on yourself to be a better listener, to be more compassionate, even with yourself, you're never going to fix it. So that's kind of the mission of my show, to bring about greater awareness and to bring us all out of the state of learned helplessness. So often we look to HR to fix things. If HR could fix things, people would clamor to get in that job, right? They would love it. Same thing with recruitment. If recruitment really did a great job of hiring people, we would want to be recruiters. We would be like, yeah, this is the best job ever. Instead, these jobs, like so many others just kind of reflect the broken state of humanity. So again, I think we hearken back to who we are as individuals and just work on being better versions of ourselves.
You know what? That's a really profound thing to say.
Thank you.
It is. I mean,
it's come from a lot of pain. That's all I know, is my own individual pain is what drives all of this.
It's a lot more profound than most of the things we talk about on this show, to be fair.
Well, I mean, you do talk about good technologies and things like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know what's interesting with that point, the point you made, though, Laurie, is this sense that maybe a lot of the problems we have are autobiographical. You know, I'm just reminded of some of the, you know, rather testy dialogue you get online with people, you know, like all of this, like, where's this anger coming from kind of thing. And then you realize you're responding in an angry way, and where the hell is that coming from?
From your childhood.
Exactly. There'll be some kind of like, there's a hang up that I have not got over. And now this thing has been triggered in me and I've just got to go and attack. And you know what? That doesn't solve the problem. It's going to give you momentary sense of relief. But in fact, that's just going to be there until you do go back and have that word with yourself, which, you know, we struggle to do. We're overly distracted. We look for external solutions, which is what technology is, right? You know, let's get a tool, fix this problem. Man, maybe it's all spiritual, you know? It's something internally we need to sort out.
I'm not sure it's spiritual, but at the very least, I think it's more human than it is technology. You know, when I think about the hiring process and why it's broken because at a gut level, we think we know people and we don't know people. We don't even know ourselves. So we can have all of these tools in place to remove biases, but if someone in power makes a decision based on a story they've been telling themselves for decades, either about confidence or perception or success or failure, it's going to override any technology fail-safe that we have. So I just would like to have more of an honest conversation about what's happening in the world. Now, I do like that there are more collaborative technologies in the world of work that are getting people to have conversations in smarter ways. And even though those technologies have limits, it's better than working in a distributed workforce where nobody talks to one another, or we do it all via text. I welcome the emergence of video, even with its own limitations, because at least we can see body language, we can see intent, we can see microfacial expressions. All of that is so important to communicating what we're trying to truly say. So yeah.
Yeah.
Hong, I think Glenn's absolutely right. He just said this is taking brain food to a different level. I actually think this kind of subject's one we've never covered. And I think we should bring Laurie back for
100%. That's happening.
I do have a book recommendation for you, because I'm that type of woman. I read a book by a mentor of mine. His name is Nick Morgan, and he wrote the book, Can You Hear Me? And it's all about the ways in which we're not communicating at work and how we rely on technology, and it's failing us night and day. And he talks about the ways in which we can actually flip our relationship with technology, tactical ways, and use it to our advantage. It's a fascinating read on the world of psychology, communication, and technology. So it's a perfect book for this audience. Can You Hear Me Now by Nick Morgan.
Right. I've just shared it on the chat stream there. You heard it, folks. That's a recommendation from Laurie Ruderman. I'm going to buy that book and read it because I need
to put out my own Amazon link so I can earn 13 cents US from that.
Do you want to do that? I'm happy for you to, I'm happy to spread the love for the affiliate links. Go ahead and do that. But you know what? I think you are absolutely right on everything that you've said there. And this is going to cause me to reflect a little bit. It's going to cause me to just take a little bit of a stop and think, because how much of the things that I'm contributing out there, which are driven by, it's not coming from a good place, let's say.
Or it's just coming from an undeveloped place, right? And by the way, I'm also full of shit, as everybody in the world knows. So there's also that element of me. And, I'm just a contrarian by nature. And so feel free to call bullshit on all of this. I'm okay with that. So
no, that's totally fine. I don't think that caveat needed to be made, but thank you for also putting that in. But Laurie, I know you're like super busy as well, and you've got like tons of stuff to go and do. You've got like cats in the house or something.
I'm fostering a kitten. If you do one thing in the world, you're boring. If you're just writing a book, if you're just recruiting, if you're just an accountant, if you're just a husband, if you're just a wife, whatever it is, that's a boring way to live life, and that contributes to unhappiness. So I told myself that I needed another project this summer while writing my book. And I don't know, I was thinking about taking some dance classes or just doing something. And then this kitten was being dragged around by its neck in a neighborhood not too far from here. And I thought, I'm going to rescue that kitten and find her a home. So that is my summer project. So if anybody out there is in the US, I'll fly that kitten first class to you. No charge.
And how is the kitten doing? Is the kitten okay? It's good.
She is, yeah, but people are awful. That's my second book.
Absolutely.
Yeah, people
suck. Absolutely. I agree with that. Well, that's an amazing gesture, an amazing sort of project to get involved with. So let me leave you to your cat care. and Laurie, definitely we need to have more than 15 minutes with you. So yeah. I'd love to get
I'll
you back. Let's talk about this psychological aspect and exactly this point. How much of the solutioneering that we're doing is actually unnecessary, because there's actually deeper stuff we can fix inside. Yeah. Okay.
Be well, both of you. Thanks again for having me as a guest.
No worries. Take care, Laurie. Great having you. See you. How cool is that? Glenn, you're 100% right. Brain food has kind of been operating at a kind of this level, and Laurie's just digging it up there. So we definitely need to explore that with a little bit more focus, I think. That was amazing. Okay, everyone's talking about cats. Everyone's talking about guests. Let's move on very, very quickly, because I believe we have a more amazing guest to come on. I want to see whether Lars Schmidt is around, because he is, of course, a good friend of mine. But you know what is interesting about Lars in particular with this context is, again, like the guest quality, Have you seen his podcast? Have you heard his podcast recently, 21st Century HR? That's come from nowhere. Suddenly he's interviewing the CEO of Basecamp. He's interviewing like the top level people really in our space, in our industry. So I want to know what that secret is. How does he get to quality that quickly? Absolutely amazing. Anyway, I've invited Lars. Here he is. There he is.
Hey, hey. Looking forward to bringing Brain Food back down a notch after Laurie, back to the typical levels.
Yeah, bring it down to mediocrity, Lars. That's exactly. This is what we've got to do. You're good another you, guy. You're a good another guy with equipment here. I mean, how inadequate are we? Can you just tell us what the hell you've got in front of you and what's in your head?
Yeah, so what's in my head will take a long time. What's on my head is a pair of Sony headphones, just basic podcast. This is a Rode NT1 cardioid mic, XLR. So the real toy I've got here, let me bring you over here, is that. That's the Rode Padcaster, which is a production podcast setup. So I use that to make the audio sound just a little bit better.
Wow. I mean, again, without sort of going overly technical, but it's clear that you care about the audio quality in a way that I've never even considered. So can you tell me exactly what you think this additional equipment gives you?
It makes me see shiny lights and bars, which makes me feel more legit than I am. So that's an extra plus. I spent 3 years working at National Public Radio in DC, which is a, for those of you in the UK, a radio and broadcast company. So I was indoctrinated to good audio there and the importance of it. So when I launched the podcast, Matt was great. Matt gave me a lot of tips on some of the tools that he uses. And then I did a bit more research and decided to just kind of go all in on the hardware. So I had every advantage I could get that would make me sound just a little bit better.
That's amazing. I'm beginning to understand. I'm obviously going to now spend some money, right? I'm beginning to understand how neglected the audience of recruiting Brain Food generally has been. Because I've just thought, let's just freewheel it with whatever standard equipment we have, and maybe that's inadequate, or maybe I'm just getting jumping onto a bandwagon here. Who knows? But I'll definitely explore this because I think sound is something we should not tolerate. Bad sound. We have enough sound pollution out there, and it's quite important that we kind of treat our ears with respect. So
when you think about the medium of the podcast, right, it's just voice. It's just audio. You're like, you're there. You're in their head. If the audio is bad or unbearable, people just aren't going to listen. It doesn't matter how compelling the guests and conversation are. So I think it's a really important, if you're really going to take podcasting seriously, investing in the audio quality, I think, is really important.
You know what? I'm going to mention a kind of a very famous individual in our industry, but he has obviously his own talk show. This is the Recruiting Animal, of course, who runs multiple things, and he's a bit of a controversial character, of course. But at the same time, it's clear he's contributed in many respects to connecting people in the industry. And his show, I think, is again a unique a kind of proposition. But I found his last show really difficult here too because of the audio quality. Because I think he does it through dial-in and, guest dial-in via Skype or whatever. They're doing it from international. The sound quality is simply too inconsistent for it to be bearable for long enough, So I think you're absolutely right. You've got to really care about what the audience is hearing. And they're hearing a dog in the background there, which is great.
Yeah, there you go. That's Muggsy. Muggsy says hello.
Bring him in, man. Bring him in.
Live, man. You can't edit out dogs alive.
No, indeed. Listen, Lars, I want to get straight into your podcast, which I've just shared the link to it here. 21st Century HR. This is quite a new project for you, comparatively. So, but you've just hit the ground running, man. I mean, the guests are amazing. The show quality is fantastic. Can you tell me a little bit about your thought process when you're, prepping and launching this thing, and what did you want to achieve with this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, so the podcast was based on a series I'm working on for Fast Company this year called 21st Century HR, where basically I'm spending the year and kind of using that to highlight modern approaches and practitioners and executives in HR that are really kind of transforming the field. And the podcast idea, and this was, interesting, this tends to be how I operate. From the moment in February, I was at work one day and I had an idea, hey, maybe it'd be cool to do an accompanying podcast that I could in bed inside of the the Post and Fast Company. Within 48 hours, I had the website built. I had everything set up and it was up and running. And so once I had it in my head that I wanted to do it, I just went for it. And so really the aim of the podcast now, so every piece that I write in Fast Company, I'll also embed a podcast in it. So if the reader wants to go deeper on the topic, they have the ability to do that. And then when I'm doing that, I usually publish every 6 to 8 weeks ish. The podcast is now weekly. So what I'm doing with it now is really using it to interview CHROs, chief people officers, CEOs, and heads of talent that are really kind of operating at a different level in HR and sharing their story. Part of it is exploring specific projects that they've implemented to try to help others who are looking to do something similar, kind of figure out a way to do that. But part of it is also to share like the career journey and the career story. I think that for me, I'm always interested in stories. And so the podcast, in a way, it allows me to have conversations with interesting people and then just record it and share it. So
Hung, to answer your question about, how do you set up a podcast and like immediately get people like the CEO of Basecamp and whatever to come and talk on your podcast, apart from just being Lars Schmidt, the other thing you have to do is you have to have it as a spinoff from your column in Fast Company or some other really important media business.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, like that certainly helps from a credibility standpoint. When people see that, they're like, okay, tell me more. So that definitely helps get my foot in the door. I've been really fortunate that I have a great network that's engaged. And when I kind of decided to go all in on this, tons of them jumped up and said, hey, let me help. Who can I make introductions to? Who can I connect you with? And so part of it is a Fast Company. Part of it is most of the outreach is coming through, my network. So it's a warm connection. It's not just me kind of reaching out of the blue. So that's definitely helped. And with Jason from Basecamp, like that was actually interesting where I was working on a story for Fast Company and I was, having some engagement on Twitter, looking for companies that include compensation and job descriptions. And somebody just mentioned him and said, yeah, Basecamp does this. And I just pinged him back on Twitter and said, hey, cool that you're doing that. Would you be interested in coming on and talking about it? And he said, yeah. So, Twitter actually is also a good source and that is, panned out so far.
So that's an example really of being kind of multi-channel mindset. Yeah. You can't just think, oh, here's an email or here's a telephone. You just got to be visible in certain places. And that just generates you the opportunity to connect with people. People might say that was lucky, but it seems to me that you've invested in all of these channels that you put in, and that's not luck. That's like by some sort of design, and it helped you get to these people, which are going to be very. I could message this guy with all of my channels for 1,000 years; he'd never come onto anything I'm doing. So, absolutely amazing you got this guy on. When I sort of promoted this show, someone actually mentioned the guest quality was the main thing. He said, look, talk about audio, the equipment and all of this stuff, but actually the guest quality is the main reason why a podcast is successful. How much would you agree with that, Lars? Or what do you think of the interview format? It seems to be the predominant way in which podcasts seem to be is the host interviews a guest. What do you think of the format, and is this the only way to play it if you want to run a podcast?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that it's all the above, right? So it's the audio equipment and the quality of the audio. I think that's really important, but let's just assume you've got that as a baseline. Obviously the guests are important, and it's not just having a guest with a big brand at a big company obviously is valuable because they have their own audience. So when they kind of share, they'll likely share out the podcast, and that's going to open your podcast up to their whole audience, and maybe their company will share it as well. And so there's that amplification effect. And that's definitely real. I've seen that, especially with some of the recent guests I've had that have got, their own massive brands. It's helped. And then part of it is the format of the podcast. So I think, for me, this is my second podcast. I had a podcast probably 4 years ago called The Best Part of My Job, where I would interview people in different fields from shark marine biologists to Hollywood producers to the guy who played Chunk in The Goonies. And it was really just kind of a voyeuristic podcast of like, what is it like to do that job? And the whole you know, conversation was like, hey,
Someone should bring this back. It's a great idea.
You were on it, Hung. You came
I
on.
I was. I remember. Yeah,
that's right. Back in the day. So I think for me, that was kind of my first experience in podcasting. And for me, it's like, it's very conversational. Like this is literally, it probably sounds like two people having a conversation with one person just being really curious and learning about the field, because that's exactly what it is. Like, I'm not, I certainly wouldn't put myself out there as the most polished host. I would put myself out there as the not most polished host, but I think that's part of why the show works for me, because it's just me kind of riffing with people that, you know, I followed their work. I'm interested in what they do. And I generally want to learn more about how they do what they do. And then it's basically that kind of a conversation that you get to sit in on.
Yep.
Do you believe, Lars, that recruiters make good podcast hosts, because we've been trained to probe into, you know, details on what people are talking about and ask questions and, you know, get into what they really mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at the recruiters every day. You're out there talking to candidates. You're out there trying to uncover things in some cases that a candidate might not want to tell you. Right. So you have to be savvy with the questions and the angles that you use. And so you're naturally going to be a conversationalist as a recruiter. I think it's hard, you know, recruiters, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, you can be either. But you have to be to some extent a conversationalist. You have to be willing to engage. You have to be willing to kind of probe, ask questions, and you have to be a great listener. And so I think there's that balance that recruiters have of being able to be curious, inquisitive, be able to ask good questions and ask probing questions, but also know when to shut up and just listen and pick up things and what a candidate might be telling you. So absolutely, those qualities, you know, for me, because I've been a recruiter for over 20 years, like that's carried over into how I kind of engage with people in the conversation. So
yeah, it's true. Being a conversationalist is not just about actually talking. It's about getting what you want to get from the other person. It's about, and not just what they say first.
Yeah.
What they really mean.
Yeah, it's the follow-up question, man. I mean, but was it 70-30, the rule of conversation? You know, basically, you need to do maximum 30% and you listen to 70. And then that is a good conversation, which, you know, a lot of people get that the wrong way around. You know, probably I'm one of those, as a matter of fact. But but that may be the key to generating the content, because at the end of the day, people enjoy to listen to a great conversation. And it seems that, you know, there's a skill towards doing that. Lars, before we let you go, can you tell us a little bit about what your advice would be to a rookie Lars Schmidt, or a young guy coming in, a young girl sort of thinking about doing a podcast? And there's something stopping them, you know, they don't have the confidence. What advice would you give that person when they're thinking about doing this?
Yeah, I mean, Matt and Lori both had great advice, so I would echo what they said. I think what I try to add to that is, and this is an individual perspective, so this is what works for me. This isn't necessarily it's going to work for everybody, but I would say go for it. Then, like, you're going to know your audience. You've got to know your audience. You have to know, kind of have an idea of what you want to achieve through it. But you can easily kind of have analysis paralysis and sit on the sidelines. And, you know, there's so much stuff you can research to try to figure out what are the tools, what's the hardware, what's the distribution strategy, what's the social engagement strategy. Think about all those things. But the way you get better is by performing. It's by getting out there and doing it. And, like, yeah, no one's going to listen. No one's going to, you know, give a shit in the early days when you're starting. And that's okay. Like, you could use that time to hone your craft and figure things out. And in some ways, that's actually better, because if you're able to kind of do that early, where, you know, you don't really have an audience, you don't have listeners, you can build up the confidence of figuring out, like, how do I do this? How do I use the tools? How do I edit? How do I work with production? And once you start to get that rhythm and you're building as you go, you're having, you know, a bit of a history of content. You're able to get out to an audience slowly, but more importantly, you're able to get your bearings and your comfort level down, so that, you know, next thing you know, you'll hit to a point and you're like, okay, I've got this. Like, I know how to produce this. I know how to distribute. I've got my equipment the way I want it. And I have, like, a perspective and a tone and a point of view that I'm able to convey through actually doing it. And now I can elevate, right? So then you're in a position to do that, as opposed to just kind of sitting back and really, you know, spending all of your time listening to podcasts and trying to figure out. I mean, do listen to a lot of podcasts, because I think, you know, you're going to find your own voice as a host, whatever you do, don't try to be somebody else. Don't be me. Don't be Matt. Don't be Lori. Don't be Chad and Cheese. Like, you just can't, you can't replicate somebody else's style and approach. So don't even try. Listen to them. See how they kind of, you'll learn a lot in seeing how they engage with the audience. You know, what level of kind of listening versus talking and things like that they'll do. But yeah, just get out there and do it and put it out there. And to Matt's point earlier, have a level of commitment. You know, you got to stick with it because you're going to suck early on and it's going to take a while. It's going to take a lot of shows under your belt before you really start to develop that level of confidence. You know, don't quit halfway through, power through it, and you'll be in a better place at the other side.
That's it. Amazing. Thank you very much, Lars, for that. I think I feel really like motivated just listening to this, to that last bit, that speech you just gave. So, amazing. Thank you very much, Lars. I don't want to take more of your time. Adam will do though. So keep on going, Adam.
Ask Michael's question. With the skateboard behind you, can you do a kickflip?
I can do a kickflip. Yeah, I still have it. Actually, I took my, my daughters to a skate park for the first time, 2 weeks ago and I landed one. So it's not pretty, but, I did not land a sponsorship deal, but yeah, I still got it a little bit.
That's amazing. We're going to have to ask you to demonstrate that at a future date. so,
but no, as long as I get a lot of takes at it, then, yeah, I'll hook you up.
That's it. Listen, Lars, thank you very much for your time. I hope you have a great day. Let's get you back on the show. We'll talk about some other stuff because I think, again, I don't think 10, 15 minutes is any way like enough for us to go through the topics we want to go through. But have a great day, dude. I'll see you soon, hopefully, man.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for doing this one. Thanks for having me on. See you guys.
By the way, Chad was right. Lars did sound like butter. Like his the mic he had, it just totally worked. And yeah, I think I'm gonna have to buy one of those things. Anyway, we're moving swiftly on because this is now like going well over time, and we are still waiting for two other people to turn up. So let's get these two on. This is the Chad and Cheese boys, obviously, which I have said in my view, it is the number one recruiting podcast, particularly if you're listening for industry news, because these two guys seem to have their fingers on the pulse in a way in which I don't quite understand how they do it. But I'm going to get them both on now. I've had the pleasure of meeting with both Chad and Cheese. Joel typically is actually two people on here, which confuses matters, but let's invite one of them in.
They're doing things in a slightly different way from Matt. And my favorite podcast this year was when I listened to Chad and Cheese and Matt doing a podcast together. And Chad and Cheese, of course, come from it from the perspective of the recruitment technology and from the tech vendor side. And Matt comes at it more from the TA side.
Yeah, I think, so I want to address, firstly, Chad, are you there? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. That's great. And well done on promoting BrewDog and Tal Rule Man. I hope you're getting highly paid for that. That's great.
One of the best beers ever.
Elvis juice, baby.
And look what is going on here. Everyone has got mics. Everyone's got beers. Adam, we are just rank amateurs at this. We need to retire.
We're playing a drinking game. Every time you say microphone, we drink. And we're pretty drunk, to say the least. Yeah.
I'm already on my sixth beer.
You know what? This could actually be a very good show. We should immediately get some beers and start drinking on this. But listen, guys, thank you so much for joining the show. I appreciate your patience because you're last on. But we're talking about podcasts. Chad and Cheese, I think, is definitely a unique proposition. And I just wanted to just kind of dig down a little bit about sort of how you came up with this concept, how you got together, and why are you still there? Like how has it continued all the way through?
We needed a bigger platform to tell dick jokes.
Right. Okay. The primary motivation.
This is like the opposite of Laurie's podcast.
This is Laurie took it up here. We're going to take it all the way down.
The listener number is tanking right now. 60, 50,
49. Nice. Yeah.
No, but
okay. So let's get through the equipment stuff real quick. I agree. From a sound standpoint, you have to have this is an ATR 2500. When we go and do live shows,
you see, Chad chose to have a prophylactic on his mic, and I don't have one, so it's sort of a personal choice. It's a personal choice. Yeah.
And then also, I believe Matt has one of these. This is what we use when we actually PV mic when we go out live. This is a Zoom H6, kicks ass, takes names, and it records everything that we do through mics, four mics, and it does it right to an SD card. So it makes it easy to pop it in. And unlike Lori, she does it like the elitist way. She's like, I'm going to have somebody else do my production. We do our own production. I guess we're like the cheap kids. So we download this. I don't have a really cool like board like Lars does. We use Zencaster. So everything that we do is software focused. It's not hardware focused unless we're out on the road. If we're out on the road, we're using hardware. If we're not on the road, we're using software.
Okay, yeah, give me some numbers on that, Chad. You've got these devices in front of us. How much is that going to set me back?
This is a very cheap $350.
That was a big investment for us.
Big investment, but well worth it. So this by itself, but then I got four PV mics so that we have shit hot mics so that when we're actually having, Adam was on the show, did an interview in Portugal with these.
We went bottom feeding on that interview, by the way.
Yeah. This is the kind of stuff that you need to be able to make sure that you do sound good.
Yeah. That's amazing. Again, thank you for the education, man. I mean, I feel like I'm getting beat up through this entire show because everyone's telling me the sound quality. I've simply not got the kit, so I need to make these purchases.
You'll get there.
Okay. So tell me about the story of Chad and Cheese, because you guys are unique in the sense it's a two-man show. The guests are not the most important play. They're very much, I've been a guest. Thank you very much for getting me on. But definitely I was a prop or an addendum to the show, which I think was totally fine.
A distraction.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just
supporting my theory about dick jokes, by the way.
Happy to be there. So do you think it's harder to do your type of show? Because it seems that the most common one is the one host, one guest type of thing. And there's not many that are two-man type of things out there, I think.
Was that a question?
Yes. Yeah, like, is it harder to do, and why are you doing it? Like, what? How did it emerge this way?
You better like your partner or the person you're doing it with. And I've known Chad for a long time. I wouldn't have done it had there been questionable sort of personalities. And I think in some ways it's easier. I know from my standpoint, you know, he's an A-type personality. He likes to push. He likes to challenge. He likes to, you know, go. So for me, it's a real complimentary relationship. I don't know if he would echo that or not. But I know for me, like, the podcast wouldn't be as successful as it is without Chad sort of being a part of it that I don't have, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, chemistry means a lot, right? So you can't just throw two people together and hope that it works out. I mean, literally, Joel and I would be sitting at a bar drinking, having these conversations. We're like, shit, let's record this. This is cathartic. Let's just do it. And we did. And going back to, I believe what Matt said is that we committed to a year. And at that point, everything, was really doing well. Sponsors, listenership was on the rise. And so we committed to make this more of a business than something that was cathartic.
I've listened to yours more than any other podcast. And I definitely can say that the part of the success is because you've got slightly different personalities.
Smarter.
Fully to that. Well, I'm there's different aspects to your personality.
Adam's going back to the firing squad where I gave him big applause and Joel was like,
he's still mad he didn't win deathmatch last time. And I don't blame him. He got railroaded.
Yeah, probably. But also Joel
Chad gave me a big round of applause and Joel gave me a golf clap when I first pitched candidate ID on on firing
squad. Let it go, man. Let it go.
Hold on to it.
It's not healthy to hold that resentment.
Hold on to the hate.
There's no hate. Yeah.
And you know it fired you to be who you are today. So in many aspects, you have me to thank for that.
Yeah, I have no problem in people giving Adam the crap that he deserves, really. So just pile it on, the more the better. But moving on to kind of the general style and theme of what you guys do. I mean, obviously, it's a little bit, you're very clear on the website. It's going to be opinionated. It's going to be in your face. Probably going to be politically incorrect. All of these things are happening. Again, is that just an emergent thing from your personalities, or was that sort of did you want it to have a disruptive a podcast in the industry?
Yeah, well, I mean, there isn't one. So you take a look at podcasts, and if there's anybody out there looking to start a podcast, you have to take a look at the actual landscape and see if, first and foremost, is anybody going to give a shit what you're saying? Second, is somebody already saying what you're saying? And what we heard was not everybody, but there was a lot of softball HR podcasts where they would have interviews and it was very softballish. And we thought, you know what, there's an opportunity for us to get in there, not be softball, not be HR, politically correct, whatever you want to call it, and just tell it like it is. We have experience. We've been in the industry 20 years apiece, on the tech side, on the marketing side, all over the place, right? So let's just get into it, have fun with it. And if the listeners come, they come, right? And it seemed to work.
Chad mentioned experience, and I do think that has a big part of our success. And that's something that you can't just read in a book. Like, the time that you put in the industry is invaluable, and we're able to bring that to the show. And a lot of people just can't do that.
That's a really good point, because all the guests we've had today, and you look at the other podcasts that we weren't able to bring on, they are people that have had some sort of tenure in the space. They're not just a young kid with a mic. Unless the podcast is about being a young kid in the mic. If you're talking at a level, it seems that people respond better if you've got a little bit of, if you like, credibility, sure. And know-how in the space.
Yeah, and to answer the question real quick on why podcasts are exploding right now, there's one reason, and that's the reason. The podcasts have never been as portable as they are today. They're the most portable audios, the most portable medium. You can't watch a video while you're driving yet, while you're doing mowing the lawn or those types of things. So audio is much more portable, and that's one of the reasons why you're seeing podcasts explode, along with the ability to just push a button and start making your own podcast. It might be for shit, but you can start making a podcast today if you want, because of all the different podcast platforms that are out there.
One of the best, slightly in odds with that, is one of the best venture capital podcasts is called the 20-Minute VC. Mm-hmm. And it's by a guy called Harry Stebbings, and he's about 21 years old. I mean, he's not got 20 years of experience, clearly. So it can be that actually, if you're completely green, it means that you ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, if you're a good interviewer, you can do it. But that's not the crux of our show. Our show is an opinion news show, and to do that, I think you have to have a certain level of experience.
Yeah. That's the next thing I want to talk about, because most podcasts, I would say 99% of podcasts are interview shows. Primarily because the feedback is the guest is going to do a lot of the work. They're going to be the stars. Your hard work is actually just to get them to turn up. Whereas you guys, you've got your fingers on the pulse and you bring the news to people. You're literally a news show. And I've said it before that, if you're a brain fooder, you subscribe to the newsletter, please do subscribe to Chad and Cheese, because at least you may not like these two guys, and I'm sure there's a big volume of people that don't. However,
and that's okay, by the way.
That's totally okay, because what they're going to do is give you the breaking news that you simply can't get from anywhere else. So I want to know, how do you do it? And secondly, how much pressure do you feel that you have to be always the first to break it, or at least very close to break it? So
a third alongside that, are people coming to you to break news?
Yes. The last one, yes. Do we feel like, do we feel pressure? I do. I don't think Joel does. Again, it's kind of like that, that, you know, our personalities are a little bit different. He is competitive just in a different way. But that's, so I'll give you a great example. Josh Gamble from Recruitix, as soon as they inked the deal with KRT, they were on the phone to me, to us. And that was kind of like two reasons. First and foremost, they wanted to get it out there into the bloodstream of the industry. And they knew we would do that. Number one. Number two, they also, we had brought it up earlier. I think in that month or week before that, hey, did Recruitix really make the right move in switching to an agency versus just staying a pure programmatic player? And that was kind of Josh saying, ha ha, gotcha, asshole. Right. Which I thought was great. And I loved, but that's the kind of connectivity that I think, you know, we need to have the show that we have, because we want to break news. Those companies know that we want to make break news, and we're going to get it into the bloodstream of our industry faster than anybody else, I think.
Yeah, and that took a while to sort of grow, because employers, vendors, people who are creating news haven't really considered podcasts as a way to disseminate or distribute that news till recently. You know, my history goes back into blogging and reporting from that aspect, and they're used to having an email list of bloggers that say, hey, here's an embargo. We're releasing this on Monday. You know, if you want to talk about it, I'll send you the information. That only has started happen recently as a podcaster. So I think it's just part of the popularity of podcasts and how quickly we can get information out and how powerful, you know, Apple and Google and Spotify and Stitcher and all those guys are, is that we can disseminate information much more quickly and much larger a scale than just having an industry blog in some cases.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still getting those emails where PR companies say, hey, listen, are you going to embargo this? And it's like, oh my goodness, this is, how are they still doing this as a method of doing press release? And obviously there's more intelligent ways of doing it, more dramatic ways of doing it.
Yeah. And also, I think we launched the Shred about 6 months ago, a year ago, which is like, we just put out, you know, 3 to 5 minute, hey, this news dropped. So we don't wait for the weekly show. We'll drop it as soon as we know it. And I think since we've been doing that as well, companies are thinking, oh shit, like I'll get that news to Chad and Cheese.
Yeah.
So that's
it. It's different. There's nothing else like it. I absolutely love it.
And we love that you love it, Adam.
Yeah. Share.
Moving on to the next thing, because I know you guys have been thinking hard about what the future of podcasting looks like, and you've seen this kind of trajectory move upwards. You know,
we're not buying Greenland, by the way.
I think it's a good idea. Through. You know what? That is actually one of the best ideas Trump has ever had. I mean, everyone knows my politics on this guy, but I think it's a good move. You know, why not make a bid for it? He can see the ice melting. It's probably good. I can see the fertile ground starting to emerge.
Better us than the Russians, right?
Yeah, let's go grab it, man. But anyway, future of podcasting, what is it looking like? How is it going to evolve in the next 12, 18 months in the recruiting industry?
Well, I can tell you how it's going to evolve for us. You know, we are doing content. Yeah. Joel's like, oh shit, what are we doing?
Yeah. Now? What is he going to fucking say?
we do a ton of content as it is. We're two guys. We are doing 20 live shows this year. We're all over the place, getting ready to go to Sweden, London. I mean, just all over the place. We're two guys. We can only scale so much, right? So what we need to do is we need to be able to partner with a group to be able to help us scale in many different ways. So in the next couple of weeks or so, we're going to be making an announcement that that we believe is really big for us. And it's also big for other HR and TA tech and TA podcasters. You know,
it's
this
called
is
a tease, hung.
Yeah, it's a tease. So
we're using your show to build our own audience. Isn't that great?
There's only 22 people watching it right now. So I think good luck with that, guys.
We're talking about downloads after. But yeah, I think from our standpoint, it's all about scalability. It's everything's growing, but you're going to have to, just like in tech. So when I talk to Adam, it's like, who are you going to partner with to be able to scale, to make yourself bigger than what you are? You can't develop everything. You can't, right? So that's what we're looking to do. How can we scale the business the way that we need to be able to grow audience, to be able to grow sales, to be able to grow just the ecosystem overall? And I think that's something from a legacy standpoint that we want to do, not just for us, but overall for the HR and the TA community.
You know what I'm reminded of, guys? And by the way, we're well over time, so we're going to have to cut this out and short. What I'm reminded
of— People are
still
here, though. Isn't that amazing?
I know. They got nothing
to do. An hour and a half, and the people have still been here. So that's—
I know. They're still here.
There would be more if we were still talking about cats.
It's not the same people. People have been in for 5 minutes and then gone. And
it's— I think it's the same people.
There's 22 people. There's now 21 people. They're locked in. They've signed contracts. They've got to be watching
this. That has a big family, is what it is.
Yeah. I've actually got a message from the Crowdcast software saying this has got to stop because we're running out of time on the software. So we're actually going— they're going to cut us off anyway. But from what you're saying, guys, it sounds like— it reminds me a little bit of the news I'm seeing from YouTube, where the creators are starting to get together and talk about platform. So instead of like just being creators to a platform, I don't know whether you've seen, but they're kind of unionizing against the platform to create something together. And it sounds like what you're cooking up, maybe something similar to that. So I'm very interested to hear more. Okay, that's about it, guys. I think we're 30 seconds before Crowdcast literally cut me off. So thank you very much, Chad and Cheese.
Have a great
weekend. Thanks for coming on. Adam, thanks for being co-host again.
Nice. This weekend.
Kilt.
Why is that?
Dude,
Adam gifted us kilts.
I love those. When we were in Lisbon. My kilt.
His wife loves it.
Yeah, she
Please
does.
Don't wear those things. No one actually does.
She does.
So, everyone, the show is over. Go home. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your beers. Bye. Thank you very much. Join us next week.
See ya.